David found a pension that his staff would love. He chose NatWest Cushion because it has a fantastic app that is easy to use. Everyone feels good, except David. He is ecstatic. Take a little more action with a NatWest Cushion workplace pension. Tomorrow begins today. Search NatWest Cushion. Capital at risk.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Advisor. I am Lisa Urbanski, co-host of The Advisor, and I'm here today with a very special guest. His name is Brian Wetzel. He is the author of the book, The Real Problems Destroying Education, which was published in March of 2024, and he can tell us a little bit more about that later. We are here to talk about school choice, private schools, homeschooling, everything to do with the school system. And Brian knows a lot about this, and I'm so excited to talk to him today. So welcome to the show, Brian.
Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, so good to see you. Third time. Okay, amazing.
So if we're going to get on that topic, we should probably start with school choice because it is the lead in to all the other aspects of, because a lot of people don't choose to homeschool unless they fear that the school where their child is districted is not either safe or doing a good job. That's not to say there are some people who do it for religious reasons, other people do it for, you know, their own personal reasons, but the majority of people who take their kids out of school are typically concerned that what's going on at the local school is not something that they want their kids to participate in or to be exposed to. And so a lot of states, I would say in the past 2 months, have enacted school choice, quite a few. And it's a good thing. I know that the teachers union and many of the public school officials aren't a fan of it. But one of the arguments, I have two arguments that I often make about this, is first of all, having known parents who, or talked to parents who had kids who were in schools where they were either, it wasn't safe, or they weren't getting a good education, or both. And I always tell people, if you're against them taking their child to a better school, are you the one who's going to look them in the eye and say, I'm sorry, you're going to have to stay here and be held prisoner to this one school because we don't want to take away money from that one public school? And I think that everybody who has kids knows you want the best for your child. You don't want them to have third rate, fourth rate, fifth rate, you know, education. And you definitely don't want them to be unsafe. And so if a parent feels they need to take their child, I feel like, you know, they should have the freedom to do that. They should be able to move them wherever they feel comfortable. But one of the things that, there's two arguments that are made about why this shouldn't be allowed. And we'll come to vouchers because that gets even deeper into the weeds. But just school choice alone, the first argument is that it's going to take away money from the public schools. Right. Well, that's kind of funny math, because what happens is the schools get paid on what's called daily average attendance or average daily attendance. And so if your population in that school drops by 10%, you're getting a little bit less funding. But you also have less kids. You have less students to take care of. And indeed, when I think it was Stanford University studied states where they've had school choice for a while, one of the things they noticed was that the quality of the public school education actually went up afterwards. And the reason that they surmised, I think they're still doing some studies on this, is that, first of all, a lot of public schools are overcrowded. I know in my wife's school, and she's a public school teacher, just to get that out there for everybody, last year they had to ask the state to waive their, so most states, and Georgia's one, they have a maximum allowed student population in each class. They had to
Okay.
ask to override that because they had too many students in their
Wow.
school. So when you take away 10%, you now have a teacher who can manage better. That's a smaller class. Instead of 24 kids, maybe you have 17. So you can spend more time with them. The other argument that a lot of people have is that, well, the only the people with means can take their kid to another school. And that's probably true, but I feel like that's an argument that is a little bit grounded in maybe, yeah, I don't really know how to phrase it, but we're telling people that you can't take your child somewhere better because another family can't. And I feel like there's probably a better way to handle that than to tell everybody that they can't move their child to another school. And indeed, if the school does do better because the population begins to fall a little bit, and let's be clear, there's not enough schools to go around. There's no school is going to get cut by 50% in their student population. That's not possible. If even if it's a 10 or 15%, that school will have a little more freedom, and the teachers will have less students that they have to deal with, and they should be able to spend more time with the students at that point. The third argument is that the reason that people who do not have means can't take their child somewhere else is that transportation may be an issue. Let's face it, it's easier to send your child to the local district school. The bus comes by and picks them up.
100%.
But this leads into my biggest argument that I've gotten into some pretty heated discussions about this, but I always tell people, school districts or union people who want to make this argument that if you don't want people taking their kids away from the local public school, then do better. Because nobody wants to drive their child an extra 30 minutes to school if they don't have to. The reason they do is that they feel they have no other option, or
Right.
they don't have any more, they have no recourse for getting better education other than to take them out of the school. And not everybody has the ability or the time to homeschool. Let's face it, homeschooling requires one parent to pretty much stay home. And even if you're working from home, you're still working with your kids. Most states still require a homeschool student to do state testing so that you can prove that you're just not leaving it at home to play video games and mow the grass for you or whatever it is they think. But you do have to prove that they're doing stuff. I will say this, homeschooling has really evolved. There was a time when homeschool students didn't get a lot of socialization or get to participate in their local schools activities, but that has gone away. A lot of states now, the local high school or the local middle school, mostly the high schools, will let homeschool students who are in that district still participate in sports or participate in dance or cheer or whatever. There are homeschool cooperatives where homeschool parents can get together so that all their kids can get together and socialize. And
Oh,
in
that's
some
brilliant.
cases,
I love
they'll
that.
even get together and let them do some of the classwork together,
Okay.
almost like a little mini school.
Yeah,
And then
community.
that gets a little hairy too, because if there's too many kids, there's some states have rules about, you can't have too many because then it becomes a class and you have to get certified as a school. But you can navigate most of that. And if you go back to the 90s, for instance, to be a homeschool parent, you probably were investing $1,000 to $1,500 a year because you had to find the resources, buy them in DVDs. And hold on. And there we go. You had to find them and then buy them. And then usually they were in disc form, and then they came with paperbacks that you could tear out sheets and stuff. But nowadays with the internet, there's so many resources that it's endless, and they're a lot cheaper. You can get as many of them as you want. You can get some that are just math focused. You can get some that are mostly writing focused. So being a homeschool parent has really evolved quite a bit. And in many states, I think Georgia's one, and Florida, I can't remember the others now because it keeps changing. So a lot of times in homeschooling, we really got off the school choice lane there, but we'll come back to it. A lot of times in homeschooling, we as parents can probably homeschool math up to middle school.
Right.
I don't know about you, but I don't do trigonometry in my daily life
No,
anymore.
no.
So trig would not be, you wouldn't want me teaching your children trig or my own. Okay. So what happens is they now will let them do some of their work at home as homeschool, and they can attend a local high school for math only, or maybe English and math.
Oh,
And so
interesting.
you can really supplement, do a little bit of homeschooling, do a little bit at the local school level.
David found a pension that his staff would love. He chose NatWest Cushion because it has a fantastic app that is easy to use. Everyone feels good, except David. He is ecstatic. Take a little more action with a NatWest Cushion Workplace Pension. Tomorrow begins today. Search NatWest Cushion. Capital at risk.
And I would encourage anybody who's interested in homeschooling, just you need to look up the rules in your state. I don't know why they're very different from state to state. I wish that would somewhat get a little tighter so that everybody understands what the rules are, but it is what it is. Back to school choice. So when you school choice, you can take your child to another school, another public school. You can take them to another charter school. And obviously, you can always, even without school choice, you can take your child to a private school. But you have to pay for that. And that is where vouchers come in. And this is a very heated argument. I've literally stopped getting into this argument on Twitter because it never ends. But, or I should say X. So vouchers, and every state has their own rules, but vouchers are simply this. So you and I pay taxes, and there's school taxes embedded in your state taxes and county taxes in some cases. And what the states are allowing you to do is to take your money and take it to the other school, even if it's a private school. And in most states, vouchers actually save the state money because it's astounding how much per student most states will put out. So let's say a state puts out 12,000 per student. They're probably going to give you a voucher for 8,000. But if you're going to a private school that's 10,000 or 12,000, instead of paying 12, you at least have 8 that you can put towards it, and you can pay the difference. And the argument, once again, is that not everybody has the means. That is true, but I don't think we should handicap people for that reason. The other extremely argumentative side of this comes to the point where many private schools are church-based or church-run or faith-based, and people don't think that state money should be going to a faith-based institution. Now, I did a lot of study on this. Most faith-based private schools are not teaching religion during school. That's done outside of school hours, typically, where you'll be invited to attend service or prayer services or whatever. So that's one side of it. But with respect to not being able or not allowing state money to go to faith-based organizations, my whole feeling about that is simply this. That's your tax dollars. They're just giving you your tax dollars to spend at another school. And if I choose to send it to a private school that's Catholic or in Catholic schools, by the way, private schools have great records when it comes to test scores and just education in general. But there are others. There's others, and then not all of them are faith-based, but most of them are. If that's your tax dollars, why can't I take it to where I want it to go? I find that a very strange argument. And I also go back to the what I said before. Are you the one who's going to look a parent in the eye and say, you have to stay here at this school, even though it's not doing a good job for your child? And so most parents want every option they can get. Now, let's come back to homeschooling. There are a few states, not many, it needs to be more, that will allow you to take that tax credit and use it towards homeschool reimbursement for the stuff that you spend online or physical items for teaching your child. As long as you can prove that it was you bought them for teaching, you can use that voucher for homeschool items. And I think that's a great thing. I think that, quite frankly, we should give everybody every option to find what works best for them. And I think I may have told this story on here before, but if you go on YouTube and look up charter school, most charter schools are doing a little better than public school. But one of the problems is there's not enough of them still. And so a lot of them have a lottery system to get in. And if you go on YouTube, you can literally see parents who have put their child's name into the lottery, who are praying, who are crying, just hoping that their child gets accepted to the local charter school because they're not happy with the public school. And there's only so many spaces in those charter schools. In states where there's unions, they have consistently sued endlessly to block charter schools from being open. And I need to get into that because that kind of angers me. But I will tell you a story. So Randy Weingartner, who's the head of the National Institute or National Education Association, the largest union, she has tried to block every charter school that's open in New York and several northeastern states. But she got her charter school open, signed on to in 1 week. So, seems like a little bit of hypocritical activity there. But and I told this on the last one, but I'll tell it again because everyone needs to hear this. Because I get people who argue all the time that charter schools are not that much better. That's not true. Statistically speaking, on test scores, your SATs, ACTs, state testing, they do fare much better, and it's a good 15% better. And I told this on the last one, but in New York, there are several charter schools that actually share a building with the public school. So the public school entrance is in one side, and the charter school entrance is on the other side. So they're pulling from the same neighborhood, and yet they're still outperforming the public school. So let's talk about that. Why is that?
I was
Well,
just going to ask you, why is that happening, Brian?
one of the things that there's a Harvard, couple Harvard studies, and there's one out of Stanford. There's a lady that I should know her name because we were emailing back and forth. But one of the things she pointed out is that in public schools, and I write in the book that most public school teachers are frustrated with the fact that they're being told how to teach, what to teach. And what to teach is a bit gray because most people would say, well, of course they're being told what to teach. What I mean is they're being told that they have to teach things that may not be really related to like social issues, activist issues, that most public school teachers that I spoke to, and some of them would ask me, is my name going to be used in this? And I was like, I won't do that to you. They don't want to teach that. They just want to teach math, English. They want to teach the basics. They want their students, they do care, to get out of school and be able to do better in life than their parents. And isn't that the goal of most people who have kids? I want my kids to do better than I did.
Right.
But what happens in charter schools and private schools is that they're being told this is the goal. So you're teaching an algebra class. We want them to learn algebra, and we want them to be able to do well on the test. And the teacher gets to teach however she wants to, he or she wants to.
Okay.
She has autonomy based on reading her students, how fast they seem to be learning, if they're, going back and reviewing, or if she feels like they're progressing fast, she can go faster. She can teach in groups, she can teach individually, she can they can do whatever they need to do to get the best results. Most teachers I've spoken to will tell you that they know how to teach. Just let them teach. But what happens in public schools, and it just goes on and on and on, is they'll be told, you're going to do it this way this year. And next year, you're going to do it this way. And we're going to do this. And the funny thing is, I've probably had 50 teachers tell me that every single thing that they're told that they move on from, they will eventually come back to. Because there's only so many
Okay.
ideas, but they never stick with one idea long enough to know whether it really works. Changing it every 2 to 3 years, that means that the student in fifth grade isn't even in high school hardly, and you're already changing everything up.
Right.
I don't know what the Well, I do kind of know what the reasoning is, and a lot of parents are unaware of this. So, a lot of school districts get grant money.
Okay.
And there's grant money based on trying things out. So, I'm not going to name the district here in Georgia. Most parents aren't even aware. They got a grant to try a new language arts program and reading program. And it was abysmal. The outcome was not great. But
Okay.
most parents weren't aware that the reason they were doing it the way they were doing it was that they got a grant to try this program, and they get the money by giving feedback and results.
Right.
And okay, that's fine. But shouldn't we be letting the parents know? I feel that's a breach of trust almost, because you're using their kids as a guinea pig for a program, and then when you find out it doesn't work, you can't really go back and undo that. They're going to move on to the next grade. Whatever they learned last year is what they're taking with them.
Right.
But that's one of the bigger reasons why they change curriculum so much, is because they're getting grant money. And in order to get that grant money, they must follow through with whatever was laid out in the grant.
Right.
Now back to vouchers. So there's also the argument once again with vouchers that $8,000, that and I get it was a hypothetical amount, but that $8,000 that you got in a voucher would have gone to the public school, and so you're defunding the public schools. But that argument again comes back to my just do better. Most parents, like I said, I don't want to drive my kids in 45 minutes away to another school. That's a lot of time. You wouldn't do it as a parent if you didn't feel it was necessary. And
Right.
what frustrates me the most on this particular discussion is that whenever I hear, I've got into many discussions, arguments about this. And what I tell people is that I never hear anybody say they don't need to take their child away. We're doing great. They never talk about the outcomes or the scores. They just talk about the money. And I feel like that in some cases we've lost sight of what is important with education. It's not about the money. It's really not. Well, we'd send our kids to school to get educated. And as we talked on the last podcast we did, you have a lot of inner city schools that are graduating 6% of the students who are at grade level in math and English. That's not good.
Right.
It's not good for society in the long run. It's not good for those students who are going to struggle now to do better than their parents. And we wonder why poverty seems to repeat itself. Well, that's one thing you can point to. If this child is not getting out of school smarter than their parents, who may not have even graduated high school, well, then that's a fail, in my opinion. And I think that states like that have the where this happens, they should be ashamed of themselves. They should be embarrassed that that's going on. And so when you look at those kinds of statistics, is it any wonder that some parents, when they read about this, want to take their kid to another school? I don't think it is.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So I'm dying to ask you this. So what if I'm taking my child to a school and I want to know if it's going to be a good school for them? Like, what are the things that we should be looking for? Because we're talking about the things that are driving us away. What about the things that are bringing people there? What does that come down to?
Well, there's two things I can say to that. First of all, most states publish state scores. You should be able to find them. They may make it difficult to find, but you can find they're required to publish the state scores for every single school. So you should have an idea of the school that you're looking at taking your child to, whether it's charter. Even private schools have scores. Public schools, you should be able to see how they're doing. Second thing I would tell you is that if you're taking your child to a school, whether it's another public school, a charter, or a private, don't just send them there. Go and do a tour. Go and talk to the front office. Most charter schools do have days that they set aside where you can schedule, where you can come in, and they'll tell you what.
David found a pension that his staff would love. He chose NatWest Cushion because it has a fantastic app that is easy to use. Everyone feels good, except David. He is ecstatic. Take a little more action with a NatWest Cushion Workplace Pension. Tomorrow begins today. Search NatWest Cushion. Capital at risk.
What their mission is. And by the way, that's an important thing to tell you. Charter schools are typically like there's one near where I'm at right now that is focused on STEM, science and math mostly. Most charter schools have a mission. You can have charter schools that are more towards the arts. You can have some that are more towards STEM. You can have some that are more towards just straightforward reading, writing, the basic stuff. They don't necessarily have a single subject that they focus on, but they all have a charter that tells you what their focus is and what their goal is for the students at the end of each year. And you should go and tour. I would go and tour.
Go and tour,
I want to hear it.
talk to the teachers, right?
Absolutely. Hear it from the principal's mouth. And if you look and see that their scores aren't very good, or maybe they're mediocre, ask them why. Ask them what they're doing to correct this. Now, I'm going to get into some one of the a lot of times when you talk to people who are deep in education, public education, or the unions, they will say that private schools and charter schools do better because they're able to remove students who are disruptive, bad behavior. Yeah, in private school, that's definitely the case. And in most cases, if you're paying $10,000 or more dollars to have your child there and he or she is acting up, most parents are going to be, you're going to knock that off because we paid a lot of money for you to be there. Charter schools do not charge you to go there, but because there is a lottery and a lot of people want to be there, if your child is not behaving, they will ask you to leave. So that is true. That's a valid point. But as I point out in the book, and I might have said it in the last podcast, if behavior is the only thing that is keeping a public school from having higher test scores and better grades and better outcomes, well, let's explore some options.
Right.
When I was a kid, there was alternative school. And people will argue, well, when you put them in alternative school, now you have all the bad kids in one school and they're just learning to be more bad from each other.
Yeah.
But we have to have some sort of means of removing disruption from a school or from a classroom, more or less, that makes some sense. And if that is what is keeping children from, or students from learning, then like I said, let's explore some options. I don't think that when I've heard this at that argument, by the way, for more than 10 years, and
Right.
yet no one ever says, so maybe we should fix that, or maybe we should come up with a plan. If that's all it is, then let's come up with a plan.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you, so what, in your words for our listeners, like what would be some solutions? Like, let's start somewhere. What would be the start of a solution to making all of
Well,
this easier and better, and our children having a better place to go?
right. If I was running a district, the first thing I would do is I would get rid of the constant curriculum changes. I write at the end of the book, the last chapter is all about solutions that I have put together from my interviews, by the way, not just it wasn't just Brian's ideas, but I do live with a teacher. And some of them wouldn't be popular, and some of them definitely wouldn't be popular with a district administration because it sort of limits their power. But I have several solutions. I think that for one, if you're at a corporation, the CEO cannot do just anything he wants. He has to answer to a board. Why don't we have a board that is made up of teachers from every school in the district, and let come to them and say, here are the curriculums we want to put in place. Please read through them, look them over. We want an answer within a week, and let the teachers decide which one they think is best. And if they say we don't want to change, and they vote on that overwhelmingly, then you got to stick to it. Now, let me give you a little, so some districts do have a board of teachers, but that they don't really have any power. It's just more or less for them to give their opinion. And one teacher told me, she said, we have asked them, we've several times everyone voted not to change curriculum and they did it anyway. I think that they should be held to responding to the board of teachers. They're the ones teaching in your district. They should have a say. That's my opinion. Second thing is behavior. Too many districts now are placating bad behavior because they don't want to deal with it, and they know it'll just eventually move on in a few years to another school. Not always out of the district, but to another school. I have spoken to teachers who talked about students who disrupted class the entire school year, so much so that other parents who had kids in their class who weren't disruptive sued the school because their child wasn't getting the education they deserved because they were letting students in the classroom that were disrupting.
Right.
Okay, well, so you're not disciplining the student because you don't want to deal with lawsuits, but now you're getting lawsuits from people who know that their child's not getting a good education because of the bad behavior. So you're just creating a circular problem. Maybe there should be a, first of all, I would get fired from a school if I was there in a day, because I would tell a parent when they came and said, well, it wasn't my kid or my kid's fine at home or whatever. Hey, that's not possible. Okay. And with some of the things that I've heard young kids say to teachers, I would never have spoken to an adult in my day, in my time, that way, because I would have gotten in big trouble. And I'm not advocating for martial law or physical punishment, but there has to be some leverage. You have to, if it means removing the student from the school and putting them in a separate set aside school or class, or making them do online only, if that's what it takes, then that's what it takes. We cannot sacrifice a room of 20 kids over one student or two students who don't want to be there. But that's more or less what's going on in most classrooms. Also, I would say that so the original idea for Common Core was a good idea. It just was implemented terribly, and they let too many other factions get in there and tinker with it till it. But the idea was that a one grade, an A grade, say in a high school in somewhere in Wisconsin, may not equal an A grade in, say, Florida, in Ocala, Florida. And so how do we standardize that? That was the idea behind it, was that everybody would be learning on the same path, and that way we could compare, and a college especially really wants to be able to compare. But it got hijacked, and it didn't work out well. I think that there needs to be a way of, so I know of a student or a teacher who has a student from California. She is in third grade. She is not doing very well. She was doing so poorly when she came into third grade that they wanted to move her back to second grade. But they were unable to because the way the rules work, the teachers in California gave her all perfect grades and even wrote that she was doing excellent. But she came into third not being able to read or write. And so the teacher is now struggling to get her up to speed with all the other students in her class. That just shouldn't be happening. There's too many schools in this country where they're afraid of hurting a child's feelings, and so they just give them a good grade regardless. It's an almost an effort grade. But I wish I could make those schools and those teachers understand that you're not helping the kid in the long run. You're only helping them in the short term.
Yeah, we got to
And
set them up for
indeed,
success, right?
yes, and indeed, the child is now struggling. Is she, we
Gonna
didn't
be
spare
worse.
her feelings because now she knows that she's behind all the other students. So I don't really understand the logic behind that. But if I was a school district, I would say, look, it's going to be apples to apples. And if a student is struggling and needs more help, we're going to have a means for that. After school help, we can do, most schools have before and after school tutoring, and very few people take advantage of that. I think that we should make that a bigger part. Because let's face it, if you're talking about helping poor parents who can't afford a tutor at home, and that's something that some people who have means can afford. They can have a tutor come to their house. Well, let's push them to get their child early to school, or maybe stay a little late and have a whole setup where teachers are working with them. When I was in high school, and I hated math, my dad was a CPA too, so that didn't go well in my house. A lot of fighting. A lot of arguing. But every one of my math teachers would say, look, if you want help, stay after school, come to my room, and I will work with you. They didn't get paid extra for that, and it wasn't advertised. But most schools will do that, and I think that that needs to be, maybe that is something that needs to be advertised, because oftentimes when I've spoken to parents and they say, I don't know where to get them help, I always respond, I said, doesn't the school offer additional assistance? And they'll often say, I don't know. Okay, well, that's a failure too. We need to be letting the parents know. Now, by the way, just because you send it home in their folder and tells them, that doesn't mean there's a lot of parents who are very lazy about checking on what's going on with their child in school. One of my
Right.
favorite stories, by the way, the teacher was telling me, as an example, she said it's not uncommon to, she'll be sending stuff home in the folder for the parents to see what's going on in class, homework, grades, whatever, and never hear from the parent until they find out it, they didn't realize it was picture day and their child wasn't
Oh,
dressed
yeah.
properly. And you're like, well, if you had looked in the folder,
Right.
that envelope went home 3 weeks ago. So, there's nothing we can really do about lazy parenting. But while they're in the school, there are things that we can do, and that I believe that that is behavior management, and I believe that it is having the teachers have a more say in what goes on. And I also think that there should be even maybe a parent board. That would be
Yeah, that'd be
my thing. If you
helpful.
want to be involved, be on a parent board. It doesn't mean that the parents should have the right to tell you what curriculum you put in place because they're not involved enough to know. But it is valuable information hearing their opinion of what's went on the previous year and what's going on currently.
Absolutely. Well, I love that, Brian. Now, if you
Also,
were
by
to
the way,
leave.
this is important. We got to strip away all of the stuff that doesn't need to be taught in school. Let the social issues and activist issues be taught by the parents. Let them focus on what is necessary to get them into college or get them into a trade and do well. And by
Right.
the way, when you
Yeah.
simplify things, you make it easier on the students as well.
I love that. I was just going to ask you to leave our listeners with a really good tip or something that they can take from this episode, and hang on to before they purchase your book. Again, Brian wrote The Real Problems Destroying Education, which it would be an amazing book to read after listening to this episode, especially with the solutions in the last chapter. I'm looking forward to that part. But what do you want to leave our listeners with? What is one thing that you want to leave them with?
Well, I want them to understand that they do have, parents do have more power than they realize. If your child needs help in school, they have to give it to you. You just have to go make your voice be heard. And I said this at the end of the last episode or last podcast that we did, is that parents need to stay involved. Your involvement in your child's schooling, all the way up to the end of high school, is going to make a bigger difference in the quality of your education than anything else you do. Okay, you can see when they're going off the rails and you can correct. You can see when they're struggling. I always tell this, I've told it 100 times. I think I told it on the la at the end of the last podcast, was that if you're finding out that they're failing their class in April, well, it's too late. You need to be seeing what's going on throughout the year. Also, one of the things that I don't often talk about, but this is important, is that be asking your kids how they're doing and how they're enjoying school. Because too many kids are getting bullied and they won't tell their parents. And one of the differences, I don't know how old you are, you don't need to tell me, but when I was in school, if you were getting bullied, at least when you went home, there was refuge. Nowadays, kids can't put down their phones. And so that bullying follows them home through
I
social
was going to
media.
say they're bullying on their phone, right?
Yeah. We used to take our daughters, we never had to do this with the boys, but we would take our daughters, my daughter and my stepdaughter's phone away when they were younger on occasion because they were getting into something was going on, it was drama. And
Yeah.
we're like, this is not your battle, and you don't need to be involved, and you don't need to make it worse. So you have to step out. And it would drive them crazy. They would keep coming in the
Yeah.
room, going, can I at least look at my phone? I got to know what's going on. No,
Yeah.
you don't. You don't need to know. I'll be honest, I'm amazed, quite frankly, One of the things, I had a mentor once who told me that it's hard to be an asshole in person when you're looking somebody in
True.
the eye. But when
It's
you're
true.
on social media and you see this on X or Twitter to the nth degree, people, they don't see the cause or the hurt they cause, and they can be extra cruel because it's just words in a phone or a tablet. And sometimes they are extra cruel on purpose because they don't have to witness the outcome. And so, we taught our kids, and one of the statistics I found, and I wrote this in the book, it was fascinating, is that 49% of, it was something like 54% of students have been bullied online. 49% of bullies have attempted suicide
I
because
could see
bullies
that.
are often unhappy with their own
They're
life, which is
struggling, of course.
why they're being a bully. And so one of the things that I think you need to talk to your kids, you have to give them some perspective on what it is that's happening to them and understand. I was always somewhat arrogant about this, and I tried to pass this on to my kids that when somebody called me a name or whatever, I would just look at them and be like, "Well, you don't know me. That's not me at all." And I would move on. But most people are not that much Teflon. I don't know how I ended up that way. And I wasn't when I was very young, but I just knew who I was. And so I didn't let somebody calling me a name be the end of my day. But that's hard for kids. It's very hard for kids, and especially girls. Not trying to single them out, but let's face it, y'all are very vicious to each other. I didn't even know it started that early. I was a single parent for a while, and I remember I got called to a fourth grade meeting with my daughter's fourth grade teacher. Because she wanted me to know that, she was being bullied and my daughter was fighting back. And she wanted to talk to my daughter with me to let her know that she has to walk away from those fights and that it's not making anything better. And I appreciated her doing that, the teacher. And then that led me to having more discussions about the fact that you don't need to be involved when somebody else is fighting. You don't have to insert yourself in it. It's not your place, and that you're just making your own life more difficult. But yeah, the girl, some of the girl fights were, when you would read through the text, I would be in shock.
Yeah, and that's a whole nother podcast episode that we can get into that for sure.
It is. You're right about that.
Yes, absolutely. Well,
Boys
our
pretend
listeners.
for more physical, so they would wrestle and be done with it in a lot of cases.
Yeah, men and women, the difference between men and women, that's for sure. So one last thing before we go. What's one last thing you want to leave our listeners? And then we will give them the name of your book again and where they can find you. And we'll leave it at that for the day.
Well, you can go to Skubes, SKUBES.com, or not dot com, at Skubes Ed, SKUBESED on X. We have all the old videos from my education company that are posted up there where you can get help, mostly with math, but there is some English and language arts, and there is some documentary stuff on Jackie Robinson and MLK.
Nice.
And then I post that stuff up there, and you can hit me up with questions. People are hitting me up lately all day long. I will give you my best shot at giving you advice, but like I said, there most of the time I'm going to try and point you in a direction where you can truly get the answer you need. But with respect to the book itself, it is full of really good information. It's really, I wrote it as a snapshot of what's going on in education, not just in the classroom, with teachers, with students, with parents, with district administrations, with the school administrations. I give everybody a sort of a lay of the land on what is going on, and you can make your own decisions, and you can even disagree with me. I don't mind people disagreeing with me as long as you're respectful about it.
Nice. And where can we find your book, Brian?
I'm on all the majors, Barnes and Noble. I don't want to advertise for anyone, but I'm on all the majors. You can get it in audio, print, or ebook.
Amazing. Well, it was so much fun talking today. Thank you so much for being on the show again.
Oh, thanks for having me back. I think I'm
Yes.
going to be back again soon, and we'll give out some new, really good information.
I love that so much. You guys, Brian Wetzel, everybody, look him up. The book again is The Real Problems Destroying Education. And his email and all of his contact information will be in the show notes. And thanks again for being here, everyone. Lisa from The Advisor.